I was one of the Native American children, adopted at birth and removed from our country's Indian reservation system. I was raised in a small middle-class farming community, but was never told of my true American Indian heritage. It was still taboo back in those early days. The years passed, and in 1987, I lost both parents. While going through their personal belongings, my wife discovered my adoption papers and she began a search. 5 years later, I was reunited with my biological Lakota family living on the Lower Brule Sioux Indian Reservation of South Dakota. I am a son of two mothers and a product of two worlds that had collided, but I have an equal amount of love and pride for both. I'm Paul LaRush, and the stories you are about to see are an attempt to share this true American story of a hidden heritage. Invited to perform for the Seminole Tribe on the Brighton Indian Reservation near Okeechobee, Florida. When we arrived, we were given a look around the Fred Smith Arena, where we were scheduled to perform the following evening. While plans were in motion for the concert, we had adequate time for a tour of the reservation and the surrounding communities. Our tour guide was Willie Johns, a member of the Seminole Tribe and local historian. Our first stop was the Etataki Museum in the neighboring community.
We're a matrilineal society, and what that means is our government is based upon the eight clan system. Like I'm the Panther clan, and so all of us, what that means is I can't marry into my own clan. I have to marry outside. So when you grow up in your Panther camps and it being matrilineal, you're being raised with all your aunts and your uncles, and your uncles are your teacher. And so the Seminole, before European, there was over 100, but now in Florida there's 8 that is recognized. And in Oklahoma, there's a lot more, because a lot more went that way, and there plus the Creeks and Seminole Nation. We allow all our tribal members to live wherever they choose. So this particular reservation here at Brighton, where we are today, is predominantly Creeks, Muscogees, and then the rest of them are filtered in with Miccosukees and Creeks, all mixed in, living together. But in our structure with the clans and the way we operate our government, in the old days, we used the clan system and the clan elders. Today, after 1957, when we became the Seminole Tribe of Florida, we started the democratic process. We have 7 reservations, the largest being Big Cypress, and it runs around 96,000. This is the second largest at 37. And the rest of them are like a couple hundred acres, like Hollywood's like 800. Well, 500 years ago, my particular group, the Oconees, were already in Florida. But they were a branch off the Red Stick. You know, there was a civil war during when Jackson was a general, called the Red Stick Wars. One was, the White Stick was sympathetic to the white, and the Reds were traditional. So a lot of them fled into Florida. And so from that point on, Florida was inhabited. And for about 100 years, my people lived up in North Florida, you know, peace-free, you know, and we operated large cattle ranches. And up until 1830, when the Indian Removal Act was signed, and that meant that all Native people would have to move west of the Mississippi. So our people rebelled at the Second Seminole Wars. The First Seminole War was nothing major to it other than Jackson invaded Florida, and we fought him back, fought him off. And Second War is about the Indian Removal Act, that where we fought for 7 years against the United States Army. My people has fought three wars with the United States, and over a 50-year period. And we're quite proud of that, you know, that we were able to sustain them and keep them off of us, and we're still here today in Florida because of that. You know, throughout history, our people has had to adapt as they the history rolled in America. Like in North Florida, we were cattle people, and then toward the end of the war, of the Second Seminole War, we was pushed into Everglades. So Everglades is predominantly swamp. So we had to adapt again. And our food chain changed to fish, although we ate fish before, but now it's one of our major diets. And whatever animals we could kill around the Everglades, a lot of deer and a lot of alligators. I think most of the alligators was just a trade item. They didn't eat much alligator, and a lot of ducks and birds and so forth. So the Everglades and the dugout canoe became our transportation, even though we had horses up in the Everglades. The Spanish brought the first horse here in North America to up around Coral, somewhere around Fort Myers, and they a lot of horses came ashore because the Calusas attacked them, and they shipwrecked, and cattle and horses roamed free here for probably 200 years. And but my people in the 1870s, when the Spanish people were, when they had the mission period up from St. Augustine to Tallahassee, they had a great mission period there. And that's where our horses to our people began. This is a tribal museum called Atatiki Museum, and it's one of the first Native certified museums in the museum world, and so it meets the standards of Smithsonian, and we have some Smithsonian exhibits here that we keep on in store. And so this depicts part of our tribal heritage, or the way we survived through all the wars and all of Florida's economical ups and downs, you know, because it affects everybody, and it affected us. It gives a history of the Seminoles as Florida became a state. Yeah, he was never a chief, never met that status. But what he did was he was able to rally the people together, and he was a young man, and he was pretty angry at what was going on, and plus several of his wives were recaptured and taken back to the slave world, and he was pretty mad at the white people. And then he's kind of like the Christ, you know. He wasn't here very long. He was like 32 years, and then he passed. You know, he's captured under a white flag. He was sick with malaria, and he died in Fort Marion in South Carolina. Well, it was in the 1900s. This reservation wasn't settled like till 1930s. So, Hollywood was like 1908. And I remember seeing the documents about Hollywood. It was only like 800 acres, and they wanted all the Seminoles to move there. And so it was designated for the indigents. So, and they were able to see a doctor. A lot of people were sick with malaria, tuberculosis, a lot of diseases. And they had a cemetery there, and it started filling up, and the people got kind of worried. So they started retreating back into the swamp where their medicine men were. And then in the like 1920s, Big Cypress was opened up, and people started coming in, and here in 1930. And it wasn't a true sale, you know. People were distrust United States, distrust the white man. And so they fought it, you know. I mean, they just lived off. But what was going against them was Florida had passed a fencing law. And so all their hunting trails were all drying up, and people didn't want them on their property. And so they had to, you know, they were squatters, and they run them off. And so they had to go somewhere. So they eventually drifted into reservation. Some of them in Fort Pierce lived in Fort Pierce for a long time, but they eventually come here. Well, you know, there's like 3,700 of us here in Florida. And I would say there's a large, almost half, that lives off, because, you know, housing's real slow too. So they live off, and a lot of them work in town. A lot of them likes the amenity of the 10-minute go to Walmart, you know, drive. As it is here, it's a half an hour drive from here to anywhere. So a lot of them like that. And I wasn't raised that way. I was raised on the res. But Tribal Council has always placed education number one priority, because we knew that they understood it. Like my mom, she was an illiterate woman, but somebody told her children needed education. So every morning she had us up and ready to go to school to get an education, and all my siblings graduated from high school at least. And then my sister and I all went to college. This school over my shoulder here, that's what their main focus is the language. And plus, you know, they work on their, what it takes to pass that test that the Florida puts on them. So this school here is highly rated school. I mean, I think it's AA school in the state of Florida. Well, we had a famous word that landed in our lap, B-I-N-G-O, bingo. It was so lucrative that we were able to buy into Hard Rock, and then Hard Rock became Hard Rock International, and here we are today, you know. We're still here in Florida. Oh yeah, we've had great leadership, and we've had bad leadership too, you know. But here in the last 2 years, things has really looked up for us. It's who we are, that cattle industry. You know, we're like number three in the nation. We raised over 45,000 head of mama cattle, and we ship a lot of calves out west, and we have our own meat program, and it's just endless process of what the cattle industry can do for us. It will never be the bingo, but it'll be at least something that we're doing that is good for people.
Most people don't realize that there are over 550 recognized tribes throughout the United States, and no two share the same history or plight in modern times. We enjoyed our visit of the Seminole Nation, and each of us made our own notes on the differences and the beauty between our various tribal affiliations. We had a couple of hours before the concert, so the crew gathered for a rare moment of relaxation and camaraderie under the beautiful skies of a Florida sunset. Then a few moments to get the bugs out of the electronics, a thorough sound check, and we were ready for the concert. Thank you for joining us this week on Hidden Heritage. We'll be right back with our closing segment, Embrulé Live in Concert.